Chapter 19. A Song of War, its opening verses. An unbroken phalanx of warships filled the oculus, looming, intimidating. In ancient times, when mankind had yet to conquer the void and ventured across the oceans rather than the stars, great ships of oar and sail would blockade ports to prevent ingress or egress, thus denying escape or preventing reinforcement or resupply. To strike forth into the ready guns of a blockade took a strong-willed or insane captain, or a desperate one. Standing on the bridge of the Iron Heart, Medjuson wondered which he had become. The Primarch, watching silently from the shadows at the back of the bridge, did not say. His eyes burned, though, as they set upon the traitors. Medjuson did not need Vulcan's counsel, just his presence. If this victory was to mean anything, it had to come by the war leader's hand, and his hand alone. A vast armada flew at Medjuson's command, its ships filled with warriors ready to fight and die in his name. Many would. The sheer number of the enemy's vessels, almost double Medjuson's own, would see to that. His eyes narrowed as if he could find a specific ship amongst the vast throng. The Lupercal Pursuivant, Tybalt Mars' ship. His iron fist clenched without him realizing. Celestial bodies turned slowly in the distance. Stars burned in their death throes. Nebulas reached across the dark like eruptions of iridescent cloud or erratic spillages of prismatic ink. Closer in, a Terminator crossed the face of a world, the planet's surface lost behind cancerous yellow smog. Beautiful in its way, uncaring of the bloody slaughter to come.
"Have you ever seen so many ships arrayed like that?"
murmured Mikosa. He stood by Medjuson's side, the two iron hands the sole occupants of a forward dais offering an unparalleled vista beyond the Iron Heart's forward-facing oculus. At a distance of several thousand kilometres, the blockade of ships looked like a wall of sea-green iron floating menacingly in the void. The Eye of Horus glowered from battle-hardened flanks, painted in night black. The spikes of lance weapons jutted like needles. Gun ports bristled. Reactors and latent engine burn gave off a faint phosphorus glow.
"It's a war fleet, Mikosa. Mustered to one end. To kill us," said Medjuson. "All of us. They aren't hunting us anymore."
Despite Goron's advice, he had failed to get any decent rest. Anger would have to reinvigorate him instead. Mikosa scowled, his face obscured by fingers of darkness stretching across the bridge.
"How like the 16th to thrust their chins at us? Ever pugnacious are Horus's thugs and gangsters."
"They're much more than that, I'm afraid,"
Medjuson replied, alluding to the prowess and tactical acumen of the Legion. As they closed the distance between the fleets, approaching maximum weapons range, Medjuson saw the gaps between the enemy vessels.
"Enough room to turn,"
said Org, from another station behind them, observing the opening dispositions of both fleets through the Iron Heart's tactical hololith.
"Then unleash their broadsides. I see laser batteries, mass drivers, macro cannons."
"A pretty mess they'll make of us, I'm sure," said Medjuson. "How close?"
"Less than 5,000 kilometres.
Medjuson nodded, though his gaze remained on the oculus. He'd retire to the hololith soon and join Org, but for now he wanted to see this unfold with his own eyes.
"Slow us down, all ships," he said,
and the order quickly filtered through the chain of command. Engines groaned, and the strain placed upon the Iron Heart reverberated through its hull as the ship fought to arrest its momentum. The bridge crew stood in silence as the ship grumbled around them. After several minutes, Medjuson spoke again.
"How far?"
"Less than 3,000 kilometres.
All ships, all stop, but have the Enginarium stand ready."
Again the order was relayed, and met by a chorus of "Aye, Lord," at each command juncture. Again the engines groaned and the hull lurched, a deep basso chime resonating dully across the decks. A low thrum rumbled throughout the ship, felt through armoured boots and bare feet alike as the Iron Heart entered a false hibernation. Ratings and gun loaders on the sprawling cannon decks came to a halt. ammo hoppers creaking ominously with their burdens. Sweating menials paused in their labours, sweltering in the oppressive heat of the ship's engines. Pilots, human and transhuman alike, waited by their fighters yet to don their helmets. Engineers looked up from their maintenance pits or stood holding refueling hoses. Throughout every level, the crew slowed with their vessel and waited, eyes fixed upon the Voxhorns. Across thousands of kilometres of airless, featureless void, the two fleets faced one another.
"Is he there?" asked Medjuson,
barely louder than a whisper. Org heard, but shook his head. Medjuson sneered, then sniffed his contempt.
"A pity. It doesn't matter. I'll break his fleet, and then I'll come for him. Ships at the ready?" he asked.
"Awaiting your command, war leader,"
answered Makosa. Medjuson had planned. He had done so meticulously and predicated his tactics on facing a superior force to the one he possessed. He had contingencies for every conceivable scenario, his rigour and attention to detail ironclad. And yet now the moment finally came, he felt the weight of decision upon him.
"The Legion must survive."
"First signal is given," he said. "Lumac, extend our traitorous cousins a warm greeting." The Vox crackled across the bridge briefly, linking the Iron Heart with the Gorgon's will.
"If you mean to kill them, then gladly, war leader,"
came a typically belligerent response from the captain of the Clan Averni. Medjuson laughed. Some of the bridge crew smiled too. Levity was good. It would dull the mortal's fear. No laughter came from the back of the bridge and the looming figure there.
"I do mean kill them, brother captain."
"Most egregiously, war leader."
He cut the feed as the Gorgon's will moved to engage. The laughter faded, replaced by a grim resolve.
"No turning back now,"
muttered Makosa.
"They die or we do," said Medjuson.
At the hololith, Org failed to notice an errant muscle twinge below his eye. A relic of the flesh, anyone would assume, if they saw it. The ship resounded to the mustering of the Iron Tenth as they tramped towards the assault boats. Battered but battle-hardened, a host of gunships, boarding craft and assault rams stood ready in their berths, attended by hordes of eager yet grim-faced crew. Low light flashed in the gloomy launch bays, a flickering and silent alarm that painted the bulkheads crimson. The light turned grainy where it hit coolant mist, or the pneumatic exhalations of depressurizing blast doors. Men and women in grubby overalls scurried before the warrior kings in their midst, a sea of urgent grey parting to admit a spearhead of dour black, led by a captain who had seen more battles than most men had seen years. Lumac of the Averni had stern features, like the crags of a weather-worn cliff, and held his chipped and dented battle helm under his arm as he walked. The pommel of his Medusan Zweihander protruded menacingly over his right shoulder, but he rested his free hand on the stock of an old sickle-magazined bolt pistol, both venerable weapons, not unlike their wielder. Those of the Tenth who served Lumac did not march alone. Over the long and bitter years following Istvan, they had made strong and dependable allies. Fighting and dying together tended to forge powerful bonds. Clad in emerald warplate, draped in drake scale, the red-eyed devils were well known to the crew of the Gorgon's Will. They hefted saw-toothed axes, fanged pikes, spike-headed hammers and flanged maces, and carried bolt guns of astonishing artistry. Dragon-mouthed flamers, their gilt frames ruddy in the light, appeared side by side with scalloped fire gauntlets and drake-headed plasma guns. Their bearers smiled and nodded as they passed amongst the crew, so unlike their iron-wrought brethren in funerary black. Their father had returned. A patriarch thought long dead, now fighting alongside them for one last battle. One of the drakes began to sing, and though neither Medjuson nor the Iron Hands Terran knew the language, they felt the unyielding strength of the words. Spear hafts and axe pommels beat against combat shields and breastplates, as the salamanders made their own music, a tribal refrain of nocturne, a fable of fire. Though few, their passion and vigour enhanced their meagre numbers. The rhythmic tattoo grew louder as the ships grew nearer, until it reached a bellowing crescendo. Silence crashed in its wake. War called, and none could vie with its song. Ramps lowered on protesting hinges, but only a few needed the encouragement of a heavy wrench or hammer to open. Fuel pipes were coiled and ferried away by efficient crewmen. The fog of preparation faded, revealing the battered flanks of gunships eager for cargo. The legionaries began to form boarding squads, seeking out their assigned ships from a predetermined roster. Not enough drakes remained aboard the Gorgon's Will to warrant their own vessel, so they had to share another's.
"Rather over-fond of wailing, you Nocturnians," said Lumac. "What did you sing about?"
He had come to a halt so he could speak with his old sparring partner, both inside and outside the battle cages. Urging his warriors to go in his stead, Neuros came to talk to the Iron Hand.
"I sang of the unflinching resolve of our Medusan brothers," he declared boldly, "and how the metal staves you have all sat upon will be difficult to remove."
Lumac said nothing, his face a mask of resolve. It lasted a few seconds before it cracked, and the Averni captain roared with laughter. He laughed so hard he clutched his side, and tears welled in his eyes. Several of the crew turned at the sudden commotion, wearing confused expressions. It took almost a minute for Lumac to recover his composure, but when he did, he clapped Neuros's arm in a fierce grip, his eyes like flint again as he held the salamander's fiery gaze.
"A strange time to discover levity, Iron Brother," said Neuros.
"It feels auspicious," Lumac replied,
revealing another crack in his steely facade as he smiled.
"And I am glad this bad blood is behind us."
A shadow flickered across Neuros's face, but quickly faded again.
"I keep my anger for our enemies, Iron Brother. I should not have doubted you. Or Medusan."
He looked up at the craft idling in its berth, a beaten-up old Thunderhawk, its toothy prows stripped down to gleaming silver.
"That is an ugly boat. Are we certain it won't spring a leak once underway?"
Lumac regarded the ship.
"Not remotely. I don't think it wants to die easily, though, if that's any reassurance."
"Stubborn," said Neuros, nodding.
"They'll have to kill it piece by piece."
"Yes, they will, Iron Brother," said Neuros,
no longer looking at the ship but at his friend. Lumac released him from his grip.
"I hope it is glorious."
Neuros grinned, the crescent of pearly white stark against the onyx black of his skin.
"Perhaps it will be worthy of a song."
In the background, the last of the boarding squads had almost embarked. A legionary in coal-black warplate handed the captain a breacher shield on his way to the Cestus. Neuros glanced over Lumac's shoulder.
"Is that sword of yours still going to be unremembered?"
he asked. Lumac scowled.
"Oh, this again! I yearn for death," he said, turning and setting foot on the ramp. "If it means an end to your ceaseless nagging."
Neuros followed close behind. He stooped into the tight confines of the troop hold, lowering a grav harness across his shoulders and chest. As the engines trembled, a low rumble presaging a much louder roar, he turned his head slightly, just enough so Lumac could see the many honor scars branded into the side of his face.
"What about Roth? Roth is a good name."
As the Thunderhawk stirred, warning klaxons began to wail and drowned out Lumac's colourful reply. A flotilla of ships surged across the void, engines at maximum burn. They had broken off from the extreme left flank of the Iron Tenth's formation and were anchored by the cruiser Gorgon's Will, a veteran of countless engagements. A survivor of Istvan, her hull etched with scars, the Gorgon had a belligerent spirit, eager for retribution. Silent lancefire erupted from Sons of Horus warships as the Gorgon's Will closed to within range. The barrage of concentrated lasbeams flared brightly as they struck shields. A tempest raged across the forward arc of the Iron Hand ship and the vessels who flew at her side. Short-lived flashes of dissipating energy bloomed with every incandescent impact. The Gorgon's will was the bleeding edge of a charge, her prow angled like a spear, sallying forth to probe the edges of the blockade. Slowly, she pulled ahead of the other ships, feeding power to her defences and engines, saving nothing for the guns. The Sorod and two massive junkers, the Sir Barnabas and Reynard Maximal, flew directly in her wake, shuddering with engine strain, held together only by willpower and the profusion of iron armouring their flanks. Two other cruisers, the Unyielding Glory and Ferrum Unbowed, flew to the Gorgon's port side, as hoary as the old ship for which they played Outrider. They were followed in turn by the frigates Bellicose and Karashi. The vessels moved forwards in an oblique line, offering a refused flank to the enemy, and close enough that their shields overlapped one another in protective concert. The flotilla closed, and the fury of the enemy's guns redoubled. Torpedoes surged into the night black of space, a deadly flock charged with dismantling the Gorgon's obstinate resistance. A second array of torpedoes pursued the first, corkscrewing in the void, bleeding contrails of propellant gas. Ship killers flew in the wake of shield breakers, only seconds apart. Flak turrets on the Gorgon's will answered, turning and auto-targeting with precision, stitching a rapidly propelled cannonade across the gulf between the ship and the arcing ordnance coming to end her. A rash of explosive detonations signalled the turret's success, a short-lived firestorm starved of oxygen and quickly extinguished. The Gorgon and her allied warships launched missiles in response, a plasma payload meant to irritate rather than cripple. Struck shields flared amongst the Sons of Horus vessels, sections of their aegis made briefly visible by the impacts, but no discernible damage was caused. Frustrated by the enemy's refusal to die, several Sons of Horus ships had begun to come about, edging forwards and committing to the turn to bring their more numerous and powerful broadsides to bear. Laser batteries glowed as they built to optimal charge, and heavy macro cannons emerged from gun ports. Urgency spoke of desperation in the Sons of Horus fleet, as the Iron Hands took every punishment meted out but kept on coming. Slowly, but inevitably, a boarding action loomed. Medjuson watched in silence through the oculus, a statue wreathed in shadow on the forward command dais of the Ironheart's bridge. Mikosa had returned to his station by the helm, while Org relayed updates via the tactical hololith.
"Shields on the Gorgon's will are diminishing rapidly," he said.
"She can take it," Medjuson replied.
"At this rate, I estimate a total collapse in under 5 minutes."
"She can take it."
The Gorgon's will ploughed on in the face of unrelenting punishment, but Medjuson had his eye on the rest of the blockade. As he watched, the oculus pushed to maximum magnification, he saw the pale glow of engine ignition.
"I read engine signatures from further down the blockade," said Org.
Medjuson nodded, his face a mask of cold determination.
"Engage plasma drives, but keep it at a crawl."
As the lonely flotilla further distanced itself from the greater concentration of Iron Hand ships, proximate vessels in the blockade started to break position, too far away to strike at the core of the Iron Hands fleet, but close enough to its impudent vanguard to warrant a response. 6 Sons of Horus ships decided to engage, led by the Potentate. They pulled away from the other renegade vessels and burned towards the oblique line of cruisers and frigates shielding a battered ironclad and 2 junker escorts. Searing lance beams lashed out from these chasing ships. Shield arrays on the distant Bellicose and Karashi flickered but held, forcing the Sons of Horus ships in the hunting pack to come closer to enhance the potency of their forward guns. The blockade ships in direct opposition to the Iron Hands vanguard burned their engines hard to expedite their turns, engaging in a slow and synchronized ballet. Their forward guns fell silent as broadsides were made ready. As the Gorgon's will came within assault range, its prow-mounted macro cannons opened up and raked the flanks of a vessel designated the Lunar Scion. The Scion's shields capitulated quickly against the sustained barrage of heavy ordnance, and chunks of armor sheared off, spilling loose into the darkness. A premature broadside from its laser batteries spat out in retaliation, but over half the blasts missed their target. The shields on the Gorgon weathered the hasty salvo, and it opened its launch bays under the cover of the flaring energy blooms. A host of assault boats disgorged into the void, flying under the shields to attack the Lunar Scion's ventral aspect, as the Gorgon dramatically reduced power to its plasma drives and fed everything it had into its forward defences. The unyielding glory in Ferrum Unbowed surged ahead, closing the gap to the Gorgon and releasing an arsenal of cluster bombs against the Revenger, Horus Triumphant, and Spear of Conquest, which were ranked up alongside the Lunar Scion. Gunports lit across the flanks of the three ships, as laser batteries and macro cannons combined in a fearsome broadside that simultaneously tore apart the cluster bombs and hammered the Gorgon. Noiseless explosions rippled across the void. Overwhelmed, the Gorgon's shields trembled and then collapsed in a violent flash of magnesium light. At the same time, the Bellicose and Karashi decelerated hard, leaving a breach in the line for the two Junkers to exploit. The Potentate and the other flanking Sons of Horus ships speared through the dark, blind hunters with a scent of prey, intent on reaching the Bellicose and Karashi. As the two frigates peeled off from the attack, the Renegades gave chase, ignoring the unarmed Junkers. The flare of shield detonation faded, revealing the Gorgon's will alive but scathed, its forward armor black and buckled. Energy crackled in the hollows of its wounds, illuminating ugly but largely superficial damage. As the Gorgon's will retreated to reignite its shields, the unyielding glory and Ferrum Unbowed took the fore, paired lance strikes gouging the stricken Lunar Scion and interrupting its counter-barrage. A fatal blow took the vessel amidships, its shields already diminished and unable to do more than flicker weakly against the Iron Hand's savage guns. A plosive but brief gout of fire billowed from one of the Lunar Scion's gunports. A burst of secondary explosions followed, racing down the ship's starboard side and tearing a gaping rent in its armor. A second punitive barrage from the unyielding glory ended it, gutting the Lunar Scion and provoking a reactor overload that ripped it and the Revenger apart. As a nuclear sun dawned, the Potentate and its hunters were bearing down on the Bellicose and Karashi. Heedless of the Junkers, the warships launched torpedoes at the Karashi, tearing away its shields and destroying one of its main engines. The frigate fell back sharply from the Bellicose, limping and beleaguered. Reeling from the catastrophic death of the Lunar Scion, the Horus Triumphant was still struggling to reignite its shields when a boarding party struck deep into its engineerium. A ragged hole yawned in the flank of the Horus Triumphant, venting pressure and the bodies of its hapless mortal crew. Fire guttered, slowly choking. Sirens wailed, deafening but impotent. Pipes ruptured, unable to take the strain. Flash-freezing crewmen who found their lungs filled with liquid coolant before they could even scream. Their bodies soon hardened to glittering icy husks. Lumac ignored the mortals, their presence as inconsequential as the debris rattling against his armor in the cold darkness beyond the breach. Instead, he drew his sidearm and gave the order to advance. Darkness fell, as power in the breached section failed. Helm lumens snapped on, strafing an expansive chamber. Bodies drifted, colliding serenely, their frozen grimaces anything but peaceful. Gantry chains hung still, icicles with cores of iron. Only cargo strapped down or bolted to the deck remained in place. Everything else had spewed from the ship, its guts violently expelled from its critical wound. Lumac reached the first bulkhead, a half-meter-thick reinforced blast door, and ushered forward two of his kinsmen bearing plasma cutters. Light flared, cold and contained in the darkness. The other Iron Hands raised a shield wall, facing the breach.
"I don't think they'll be coming from that way," Neuros said over the vox.
His drakes looked to the bulkhead, their toothy war helms glowering with apparent disapproval.
"I've been stabbed in the back once too often to be complacent," Lumac replied.
Neuros nodded, the movement slow with the absence of gravity.
"Hard to argue against that, Iron Brother. Though I fear we might die of old age before the traitor's knife kills us."
Neuros gestured to one of his warriors, who thumped a fist against his fire-blackened breastplate and brandished an ornate pike forged of deep red metal.
"Have your men stand aside, Iron Brother," said Neuros.
Lumak turned, his helm's faceplate lit by the pale glow of the toiling plasma cutters.
"Let Umendi demonstrate the strength of Nocturnian steel."
Lumak gestured, and the two iron hands withdrew. Umendi engaged his pike, and the faint red crackle of a disruptor field suddenly wreathed the blade. A single thrust pierced the bulkhead, parting metal like flesh. With the blade still embedded, he cut across a diagonal, first up and to the right, then down. As Umendi wrenched the pike loose and stepped back, a triangular glow faded where the metal had been cut through.
"And?"
asked Lumak. Neuros cocked his head slightly.
"Well, I cannot do everything, Iron Brother."
Lumak gave a small shake of the head.
"Velig! Kernox!"
Two iron hands advanced on the bulkhead and struck it with their breacher shields like a battering ram where Umendi had made the cut. After three blows, a large section of the bulkhead fell inwards, opening up the ship beyond.
"Take the vanguard,"
said Lumak, and Velig and Kernox entered the breach. About to follow, the Averni captain felt a hand on his shoulder.
"Your gratitude is appreciated, but unnecessary, Iron Brother," said Neuros.
Lumak scowled beneath his war helm.
"I need to kill something."
A second bulkhead door slammed down behind them, cutting off their escape.
"Don't worry, Iron Brother,"
said Neuros, as angry shouts echoed from deeper in the ship.
"Something has come along."
The ironclad Sorod closed on the Spear of Conquest. The cruiser had been joined by four other Sons of Horus vessels in an effort to overwhelm the unyielding Glory and the Ferrum Unbowed, which were running rampant in the wake of the Lunar Scion's destruction. But as the reinforcements closed, both the unyielding Glory and the Ferrum Unbowed slackened off their plasma drives and began to lag behind the bullish Sorod. All weapons fell upon the ironclad and tore it apart, piece by piece, but like an aging pugilist too stubborn to fall, the vessel kept on coming. On the Iron Heart, Medjuson resisted the urge to punch the air. Corpses of renegade ships littered the void, listing dangerously into the paths of their comrades. The Sons of Horus held, but their right flank was in disarray. Gaps appeared in the blockade, but the rest of the fleet would soon fill them if the Iron Tenth committed everything now. As the Sorod charged towards certain death and the Junkers rattled within range of the potentate, Medjuson uttered two words that would shatter the right flank completely.
"Org! Forgebreaker!"
The Sorod's skeleton crew of servitors came to an abrupt halt, frozen in their duties. Dull-eyed and slack-witted, they had no concept of the volatile and explosive cargo that filled the echoing hangars of the ship. They knew only the imperatives given to them by their Iron Master. Slaved to a monotonous existence, some since the early days of the Crusade, none amongst the lobotomized wretches would ever know the importance of their sacrifice. No one would mourn them, because in truth they had died a long time ago. Only the ship would be remembered, its name forever etched in history. Alert sirens began to sound across the bridge, but no one heard them. Red flaring light stained it from within, but no one saw it. Stood erect at their stations, the servitors enacted their final task with curious dignity. An automated voice called out the last seconds of the Sorod's proud existence, a diminishing sequence that ended in annihilation. A massive explosion erupted across the Iron Heart's oculus as the Sorod self-destructed, followed moments later by the Sir Barnabas and Reynard Maximal. Every incendiary Medjuson could spare had been packed into the gaping holds of those three vessels, his hope that they would be ignored by the renegades in the cut and thrust of fighting warships with teeth.
"But you missed the hammer, didn't you?"
he murmured to himself. In the days of sail, when men still plied the oceans, old sea captains had a name for sacrificial vessels whose holds were crammed with barrels of gunpowder. They called them fireships, and sailors rightly feared them. With decks eerily deserted, their timber frames were set aflame, and the blaze would carry onto any enemy ships that strayed too close. In turn, the fire would spread to other vessels and set them ablaze too, before reaching the stores of gunpowder. In such a way, blockading vessels around a port or island could be breached, and escape or relief bought for the sacrifice of a single ship. Ships of the Void did not burn like the man-o'-wars of old, but the tactic of a fireship still had merit. As the explosions faded, wreckage drifted in their wake. A host of Sons of Horus warships had been crippled or destroyed utterly. A gaping rift yawned in the blockade wall. "All ships to engage," said Medjuson, eyeing the debris fields with grim satisfaction. This had been coming for a long time, ever since the Gorgon fell, though none would have known it back then. Most of the Iron Tenth hadn't made it to Istvan. They either died in orbit or were forced to turn back, chased by news of catastrophic defeat. A prideful legion had been humbled, brought lower than they could have ever imagined possible. They knew of only one way to reclaim their dignity and honour. Fail at this, and the Iron Hands would be no more. Death would be preferable. "No more hiding," muttered Medjuson, as alert klaxons sounded and the shields shimmered in readiness for the fury to come. He remembered Org's words. The Legion must survive.
"War leader,"
Mikosa spoke up, prompting Medjuson to turn his head. But as he did so, and his gaze took in the bridge behind him, he knew what the Clan Sorgol captain had been about to say. Vulcan had gone.